Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for listening to What Mama Wants. I kind of think Mother Earth wants less toxics and more health for her planet. This is a chance to hear from educators, citizens, policymakers, and scientists about the role toxics are playing in our daily lives. Things like PFAS, plastics, and pesticides. And we always wonder what Mother Earth wants while we're at it. My guest today is Lee Webster, a funeral reform advocate from the Plymouth, New Hampshire area. Lee has applied her well-rounded English major skills as a writer, teacher, speaker, and researcher, focusing on the emerging field of palliative care, home funerals, and green burials. She is a national expert on earth-friendly end-of-life choices. Thank you for coming on What Mama Wants today so we can talk about the toxics our culture has integrated into conventional after-death practices, Lee.
Thank you so much for having me.
Would you be willing to tell us what the areas of toxic concerns are in the conventional lawn burial scenario?
Sure. Yeah, I think this is what we think of as the traditional funeral, but it really isn't traditional at all. It's what we've been doing only for the last 100 or so years. And that includes putting chemicals into our bodies through invasive procedures like embalming, and then putting that into a box, the casket of some kind, which is made from steel from Canada, from China, from all over the world, or hardwoods, for instance, that might be harvested in rainforests and then shipped up shipping lanes and out to the middle of the country and then turned into boxes and sent back out again. Enormous carbon footprints around these products. And then the other thing that we do is put that inside a concrete box, a vault. Sometimes they're plastic or fiberglass, but again, you can see that there's an enormous footprint to all of those things. So add all of those things together, and what you've got is it is a recipe for an enormous amount of carbon being emitted, greenhouse gases. And you've also managed to figure out a way to try to cheat death. And we're starting to recognize that maybe that's not doable, no matter how many boxes we encase ourselves in.
And eventually the juices run out, right? And
yeah, concrete always cracks. Water gets in. There is no such thing as a waterproof or airtight casket. Nature is going to win, no matter what. And so what we're looking for are ways for it to win better, to do a better job of what it initially started to do.
I like thinking of myself as part of the planet, made from the same stuff that everything else is made. I like the idea of returning that. I'm a composter, for Pete's sake, right? And so why would I want chemicals to keep myself from decomposing?
Yeah, one of the fallacies around embalming is the idea that we're all little Egyptian mummies, you know, being preserved forever. The shelf life of a typical embalming is about 14 days. That's how long the preservative effects last. So it's just to get through a public funeral in an institutional setting. And it's not required by law. So this is something that we have been choosing to do since the Civil War. It's become the cornerstone of the funeral industry. And over time, people have come to believe that it's necessary. And it's not at all. Our bodies are very well preserved most of the time in most circumstances with cooling. It's very typical. In fact, funeral homes here in the Northeast tend not to even have refrigeration units because we don't stick around long enough. we go to disposition. So the whole idea of embalming has to do with a funeral director's marketing plan that started in about the 1930s called the memory picture. And that meant that they were going to try to preserve the body in a way that viewers at a public viewing would see that person looking, you know, plump cheeks and rosy cheeks for white people. And the idea then was, you know, that it would be the last time you ever saw that person and it would be wonderful. But what they're not seeing is what goes into the process of creating that picture. And we're no longer interested in still pictures. We are a moving video world now. So all of this is really quite unnecessary.
Right. We have phone messages and videos of this person that won't be our last image of them. So
right,
we don't need to preserve the body for the last look.
And the body that has died of natural causes in hospice or something like that, something that's not a traumatic event, is going to hold for certainly plenty of time. We tend to do this within about 3 days here in the U.S. That's pretty typical. That's about the amount of time that it takes for the body to start showing. So we don't automatically look like they do in horror movies the minute that somebody dies. We can look quite beautiful, in fact. And we can do this in a very safe way without using toxic chemicals or invasive procedures.
Yeah. In my research on this, I saw that they use about 3 gallons of formaldehyde per human body, and we're burying about 1 million human bodies a year in our country. So we're talking about 3 to 5 million gallons of formaldehyde going into the earth a year.
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing. The formaldehyde itself is dangerous in its gaseous form. So what that means is that the people who are handling the embalming, which is embalmers and funeral directors who embalm, they're not the same thing, but they're the ones who are being exposed. Despite OSHA requirements and so on, they're the ones being exposed repetitively throughout their work life to these toxic chemicals. And what we've discovered is that we're concerned about worker safety in their regard, because they are more likely, about 13 times more likely, to die an early death compared to the general population. They also, there's an instance of about 8 times the risk of developing myeloid leukemia and other blood diseases as a result. Also, we just had a study a few years ago that revealed that about 3 times the number, 3 times the risk of developing ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. And beyond that, I know from, meeting so many funeral directors that Parkinson's disease, other neurological diseases are very common. And that has to do with the other things that are embalming fluid. It's not just the formaldehyde. It's all of the other materials, including neuro agents. There's things in there to plump things up and dyes to make it pretty and all that type of thing. But there's also methanol and so on. So all of these things are going into the ground. The formaldehyde itself dissipates over that 2-week period. So that's not our big concern. It's the other stuff. And it's about what we're doing to professionals. It's what we're doing to people unnecessarily.
Yeah.
Those materials, by the way, when we remove all of the body fluids from the body, they go into the septic system or they go into the water treatment plant. So there's no biohazard, that dump in space for us to put all this stuff that we are replacing with all these chemicals. So that's a concern as well.
I understand that methanol can cause birth defects.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. But again, that's not something that we're focusing on for embalmers, the formaldehyde first issue. And when it's in the ground, it's going to be like anything else. Nature's going to take its course. It's going to filter those materials. It's going to bind to molecules and it's going to pretty much mitigate that, just as it is chemotherapy in our bodies. We're choosing which things we're going to worry about here. And we're worried about the living.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This makes sense. So are embalmers aware that they're at such high risk?
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, a few years ago, there was an article in one of the funeral trade mags by one of their own attorneys who made the case that embalming really is on its way out and that the funeral industry really needs to be paying attention to the fact that people don't want this anymore. And also included in that article, what these dangers are for the funeral industry. But it's an entrenched industry. These are people who go to work, 24/7. They're available to us. They, for almost all that I've ever met, are there not to make a great big bundle of money, because most of them don't. In fact, the national average for funeral directors is about $550 less than a third grade teacher makes. So this isn't about making money. These are people who really want to be serving families. But their belief is that using formaldehyde-based products is in service to families, and so they accept it as a hazard.
One thing that I've been learning about as this goes on that I never considered was the working hazard to the people who care for these lawns at cemeteries and all of the footprint that leaves behind. You go into a cemetery, it looks pretty, and you think, what a nice place, but In fact, of course, you're using pesticides and fertilizers and carbon footprint machines to keep that area cleaned up and trimmed. I'd never considered that as part of the footprint of burial before.
Yeah, it is a big part of it. As a matter of fact, one of my big concerns from a social justice point of view is that we have these statistics on professionals, but we don't have statistics that I can find that a lot of us are looking for and hoping for to talk about cemetery maintenance workers and the people who are otherwise engaged in keeping all that lawn space looking beautiful. So former runners like me can go through thinking that we're not inhaling all of those herbicides and pesticides. One of the issues around this is being revealed is that cemetery managers and lawnmowers, people like that, are the ones that are being targeted by these class action suits having to do with Roundup. That's one of the main groups that they're looking at, landscapers and cemetery workers, because exposure to all of that stuff is extremely dangerous. And we do know that there is an increased risk of cancers, neurological diseases, all of those types of things from these types of products. But it's more than that. When we're thinking about the lawn surface of many cemeteries, often called Riverside or Lakeview, so that gives you a hint. We're really close to water in a lot of these. So we put all of that fertilizer on top, phosphorus, we end up with phosphorus runoff, just like we do in farms. And that goes then into standing waterways and can create algae bloom that then basically kills off all the marine life, all of plants and fish and everything else. So we have people at risk, we have marine life. And if we keep this going for long enough, we're really doing pretty nasty things to the soil beneath. So there's a lot going on there that's not beneficial to anyone.
Yeah. There's so much more than we generally consider. And then that leads me to wondering about cremation. Is that toxic free? Is that a better choice?
This is a really uphill battle for us because we're watching cremation rise over time. A couple of years ago, it was supposed to hit 50%. In some places already here in New England, we're over 67%. In the Pacific Northwest, we're looking at King County in Seattle, that's 99% cremation. It's the national average isn't really what you're looking at. You need to be looking at regional acceptance of this. And there are some socioeconomic issues that go around with this a whole idea too. But the issue with cremation is that many people choose it because it's easier. They think it's less expensive. It isn't necessarily. And they think that ritual doesn't matter. A lot of people are giving all of that up. And we're finding that that's coming back to bite us. When you don't acknowledge life events, things happen. But the environmental piece around this is really deeply concerning. It takes a tremendous amount of fossil fuels to burn the average person. And crematories tend to go anywhere between 1700 and 1900 degrees for a couple of hours per person, sort of average height and weight. And we know Americans aren't that. So we've got a lot of fossil fuel we're using there. We're looking at the release of mercury, mostly from the amalgam in our fillings. So that goes up into the atmosphere and back down into waterways. Lots of other byproducts and emissions, including nitrogen oxide and acid rain, good old acid rain. We're also looking at our carbon release into the atmosphere, anywhere up to about 250 pounds per person. So there we have that along with all those other things. And it then creates this byproduct, okay? People think, oh, here it is, and then I'll have the ashes. Well, they're not ashes. They're pulverized bone. They're made of calcium phosphate and sodium. So if you're a gardener, you know you can't just throw calcium phosphate on plants. You can't throw salt anywhere near roots, or you're going to end up with problems. So this is the tough part for people to understand, is that not only do they have this 8 to 10 pounds that they have to now find some kind of home for, but if we bury it below ground, we're essentially creating a salt lick. It's anywhere from 200 to 2,000 times too sweet. It has a really high pH. And so nothing can draw nutrients from it. There's no available nutrient value to cremated remains. It takes about 3 years for them to sit and neutralize. Again, nothing nutrient about it. Don't put it under grandma's rose bush. or you won't have grandma's rosebush. And then people who want to then scatter it above ground, again, have to be thinking, just as we did in the lawn cemetery with those fertilizers, if you dump, you know, pounds and pounds of phosphorus, calcium phosphate, basically on the ground, it's going to find its way into waterways, into vernal pools and wetlands and whatever else. So that's enormous concern. So if we can't bury it and we can't scatter it, what are we doing with it? So anything that has a secondary process is concern if we are interested in what's going to happen environmentally, because it's not enough to just burn people up, or in the case of alkaline hydrolysis, to melt their soft tissue away. You still have to deal with the bones. Human composting, same thing. We're looking at having that second product. In that case, it's compost material, but it's about a cubic yard or more that then has to find a home. So lots of issues with anything that isn't a direct body to earth.
Can you say another word about alkaline hydrolysis? I don't think that that's a household term yet.
Yeah, it isn't. It has a lot of misnomers, not other names, but misnomers. It's often called bio cremation or water cremation, wet cremation. Well, it isn't. Cremation means incinerated. So by fire. So very specifically, but this is a different sort of canister that the body goes into, and it uses anywhere up to 350 degree water under pressure using lye. All right. So potassium hydroxide, which is an alkaline solution that's then going to dissolve tissue. That means that at the end of this, we've used less energy than we did with flame, but we're going to emit less CO2, but still it's significant. But what we're going to have is up to 300 gallons of effluent when we're done. So that has to be disposed of along with the crushed bone. So more things to find a home for.
Yeah, pick your poison, so to speak. I understand that one thing with cremation, and I imagine with burial and all these, is mercury. Our mercury fillings are up to 50% mercury, actually, and that nothing likes mercury that's alive.
That's right. Well, and it really is kind of an age thing. It depends on how old you are, whether you have those mercury filled amalgam, you know, fillings. Now, when you have a filling done, chances are good that there is little to no mercury. We've become aware of that. But our bodies also accumulate heavy metals over our lifetime. Those are also being emitted, I guess. So it's not just the mercury.
If you are just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to What Mama Wants, Less Toxics and More Health. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Lee Webster. She's the go-to expert in green burial world for her vast knowledge of the movement. In fact, her book was just reprinted, and it's called The After-Death Care Educator Handbook, a practical guide for teaching how to care for our own dead. We've been talking about how toxic a conventional lawn burial or cremation can be. So my question is, why do we keep doing this? Why do we invest in lawn burials and cremations?
Yeah, boy, I wish I knew. I can tell you that all of us in the advocacy world, we're still calling it alternative, where what we really want to be doing is calling this mainstream funeral work, where we get back to acknowledging that we are human bodies and that we do have a lifespan. And when we are done with that, we will decompose and become what nature always intended. And I think that what's happened over the last, 100 years is that we took a necessity that occurred during the Civil War, trying to get young men back to their families. We took that to an extreme. Instead of reverting back to what was normal, we went, oh, what a great idea. Let's just keep doing this. And once it got legs, it just ran. And to the point where people simply believe that this is the way it has to be done. They've been also taught, there's a lot of mythology around this, a lot of madmen marketing that happened early on that's still going on, that we still believe. And one of them is that our bodies are dangerous when they're dead, which is, again, not true. There's very, very little that is dangerous about the body. Something like Ebola that doesn't exist here, prion brain disease. You know, we handle those in certain ways, but almost every other disease that we have, including COVID, is not dangerous, contagious, horrific. We have to get used to the idea that our bodies, so this is the way it is. This is the way that it needs to be. And coming back to respecting and revering that process. And I think that's where natural burial comes in, where people are saying, you know, enough is enough. I don't want my body punctured and drained. I don't want chemicals. I don't want a concrete box that has enormous carbon output to make and so on. Don't want anything between my body doing what it needs to do and what will happen. That's what we've been doing. We're putting all these artificial barriers in place to make ourselves think that we can avoid death. We can avoid thinking about it, being it, and we can't. And so we're flipping the switch and going to embracing what we know always has needed to happen, and we want to continue to have it happen. And beyond that, we're looking at now the benefits around natural burial, which is body to earth, no matter what, however you see it, that's what it is, you know, getting rid of all of those things. But beyond that, we're seeing the ability to use our body to benefit the planet. This is what the earth wants. It wants our nutrients. We have nutrient-rich bodies. And when we bury naturally, we're sequestering that carbon. We're not spending it. So when we start to look at things that way, it changes our relationship to each other. It changes our relationship to the earth. And more people are recognizing it. But they also kind of get swayed by other things that sound a whole lot more interesting than, oh, put a body in the ground and Mother Nature will take its course. So they start looking at adding mushrooms that don't grow at that depth and they don't work at that depth. They don't spend your money on that type of thing. We're looking at human composting. We're looking at natural organic reduction, which is a great thing because it's an urban solution, which does mimic almost exactly the processes of natural burial that are easy for us to do in rural areas because we have space for them. So we're refining this, but then we've still got that secondary process. But at least it's removing all of the toxins and all of the things that bar us from our real destiny.
It's a sweetly simple cycle if we get out of the way, isn't it?
Yes, if we could just get out of our own way.
I personally find it a comfort that I belong to the earth. And I really love what you're doing. If people have more questions along this line, they can visit your website, New Hampshire Funeral Resources and Education at nhfuneral.org, which I will link to in the website, whatmamawants.org. And so much of your work is findable on the web and through your newly reproduced book. Lee, I know you've thought a lot about what Mama wants regarding burial practices when we die. I think you've kind of said, but what do you think Mama wants explicitly?
Yeah, I think all my body nutrients, and I mean, not just the ones from all those vegetables I ate, but everything else about me. You know, a lot of people they're concerned that they might have an artificial hip or they might have undergone radiation treatment or something like that. Well, Mother Nature knows how to deal with all of those things. So there's nothing about us that makes us ineligible for this thing. So that's it. That's what Mother Nature wants from us.
I love that. And there are some beautiful ways to do that. I looked around at some resources and you're part of an artisan's collective that I thought was really inspiring, a beautiful way to make this transition into a new ritual.
Yeah, this is also an attempt to avoid greenwashing. This is one of the things that is happening a lot right now. It's because, you know, people are starting to catch on. So now the entrepreneurs and the scam artists are coming out. So you want to keep an eye on all of this. But one of the ways that we've done that is to encourage people to shop local. Find a local artist or craftsperson who can make funerary objects for you. And so we've started a collaborative here made of people who do make these things. And for the most part, particularly when we're talking about some of our casket weavers, they grow their own materials when they can. So the materials are sourced locally, they're made locally, they're only sold within a certain radius in order to keep that footprint down. But more and more people are making these materials. You can make things yourself. There's no reason not to. Even if you work with a funeral home, they have to accept what you bring with you for a container.
Yeah. Beautiful baskets and shrouds of organic materials that go with you back into the earth.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so we're using these materials. We have our local artists. And so it becomes this very tight community-based event. So that's another one of the advantages to natural burial. So it's community-based. This is another major part of this work, is that we're encouraging community. What happens in these green cemeteries is community-based. It's not just a place to warehouse the dead. It's for people to come and recreate and educate and be in the space, use the space.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lee, to close this interview, I'd like to ask you a few quick questions about your personal relationship to the earth, if I might.
Sure.
Okay. As a kid, what was your favorite thing to do outside in nature?
Yeah, I grew up in horse country, so I had miles and miles of interconnected horse trails where I cross-country skied, hiked, biked, walked, you know, slept out. Yeah, just
great.
Being there. Mm-hmm.
Can you describe a scene in nature when you have felt awe?
Oh, yes. My husband and I have often made trips to Scotland, which is, of course, my family heritage and have relatives there, where we would go and we wouldn't be in a car for 2 or 3 weeks at a time. We'd just walk. And I have to say, every day you'd come from the valley up into the hills and then go back down at night. And every time we would ascend the hills, it was always awe-inspiring. It's stunning to see a place that is not the place that you live. You see it with fresh eyes and you marvel that it's still there.
I think the fresh eyes and the awe go together well.
Mm-hmm.
What's one thing your mother taught you about Mother Earth?
Oh, my mom was a great gardener. And that's where I learned to garden. I became a profession for a while there. I worked professionally for about 10 years gardening. It was something that made us close to each other, but it also gave me permission to get my fingers dirty.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mom. What's one thing that you wonder about in nature?
Yeah, I'm fascinated with the decomposition process. I don't think of it as anything horrible, but I really am curious about what it's going to look like, feel like. So I'll be able to feel anything. That's probably what I wonder about the most. How long will this really take and how does it work? Who's going to show up first? Which coffin beetle and which, you know, what is going to show up?
That's interesting. It's like a final lab after all your research.
Mm-hmm.
What is your favorite baby animal?
Oh, gosh, lambs. We lived on a farm first few years of our marriage, and that was the first thing I did was have to stick my arm up to my elbow to pull a lamb out in trouble. And I think that solidified it for me. There's nothing like them running around kicking.
Power of the life cycle.
Yeah.
Lee, you are devoted to helping us learn how to care for our dead loved ones, and you're doing that in such a respectful way to the planet that sustained us. Thank you so much for the work you do and for being my guest today.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure.